Passage is made possible because of support from people like you, the listener. To find out how you can support Passage, visit patreon.com/passagepodcast. There, you'll find information on our reward levels and what you'll receive for supporting Passage. Some of these rewards include episode transcripts, exclusive audio updates, and even exclusive bonus episodes. That's patreon.com/passagepodcast. We can't make Passage without you. Thank you for your support. Hey guys, it's such a YouTube way to start this. Anyway, my name is Daisy Bonham, and I'm speaking with you live. Well, not live, you know what I mean. Anyway, I'm speaking with you from Puget Sound, not Pudget Sound. I've been told locals don't say Pudget Sound, it's Puget Sound. Specifically, I'm aboard a passenger ferry called the Skonomish, named for a local Native American tribe that called this region home. Still does, I assume. The Skonomish, which might get a little noisy, I'm just warning you, is about 10 minutes into a half-hour trip from Anthes Island across a 7-mile-long strip of water known as Marrow Passage, en route to the Olympic Peninsula, specifically the town of Port Possession. If some of these names sound familiar to you, well then, good on you for paying attention to the news. Marrow Passage, which runs along the east side of the peninsula and the west side of Anthes Island before heading south and spilling into Elliott Bay near Seattle, is the site of a very fascinating and disturbing discovery made last week. In case you haven't been reading the news or been anywhere near social media, like talk shows or cable TV in the last week, here's what we know happened. Last Thursday, two Anthes Island crabbers were making their early morning rounds in the passage when they noticed a small boat floating in the near distance, far enough away that they couldn't tell why it was there, but close enough to tell that there wasn't anyone aboard. They motored closer to take a look. When they approached the boat, they received quite the shock. Inside the 20-foot rowboat lay four skeletons. Not corpses, skeletons. A bunch of decaying clothing draped to the bones and an old pistol lay on the hull. That was it. How this boat got here and what it was doing floating in the middle of the passage like that was a complete mystery. Still is. The crabbers called it in and soon the area was swarmed with authorities, police, Coast Guard, a Homeland Security team even showed up to make sure this wasn't some kind of terrorist plot gone awry. It wasn't. At least, if it had been some kind of terrorists, they certainly weren't the ISIS or 9/11 types, and it wasn't some kind of murder-for-hire scheme. It probably wasn't a suicide pact, either. How do we know all that? Well, for 3 days, we didn't. We didn't know anything. Everyone was falling over themselves trying to make sense of it. Reddit was full of theories and explanations, a few of which led to an unfortunate incident where one of the crabbers' homes was swatted. A game some idiots like to play by calling in a threat to 911 against someone and then watching as SWAT teams break down the doors to the person's house looking for crimes that don't exist. Police were forced to make a statement clearing the two men of any wrongdoing and asking the public to withhold further guesswork. The drama died down, but the memes did not. Even now, you can't go on Twitter or Facebook without seeing one of the leaked photos. The skeletons make witty repartee with one another about Harambe, or suddenly have crying Jordan faces just because. As a society, we don't do well when information is scarce. We fill that space however we can. 3 days ago, we finally got some answers. The skeletons in the boat belonged to three men and one woman. Internet sleuths had already confirmed as much based on the remaining fragments of clothing. As for the gun, it was a Colt Model 1855 side hammer pocket revolver. also known as a Colt Route revolver, a popular model during the American Civil War. The single-action gun had five chambers. They were all empty. And then there's the boat itself. Where did it come from? Well, that was the easiest part of all, at least had we been able to see its port side, which read SS Cumberland Lifeboat No. 5. And with that, the internet exploded all over again. The SS Cumberland is one of those stories the people of the Pacific Northwest have been telling at campfires for generations. Its demise, or apparent demise, has been the topic of internet sleuth message boards and cable mystery shows hosted by D-grade celebrities for years. For most people, though, the Cumberland story is at best a footnote in America's maritime lore, or even more likely, completely unknown altogether, at least until 3 days ago. So, again, assuming you haven't had access to any conceivable form of news dissemination in the last 3 days, here's what happened, as far as we know. November 29th, 1866. Yes, I am aware that that is almost exactly 150 years to the day when the lifeboat was found. But bear with me, we'll get to that. November 29th, 1866. The SS Cumberland is docked in port possession, about to begin its voyage back to San Francisco. Built in 1848 by William O'Malley and Sons, out of Boston, the 1,200-ton iron-hulled vessel measured 252 feet in length. It was built to charter passengers and cargo to and from New York City to South America. A normal trip aboard the Cumberland back then would have been a 26-day voyage. The vessel made this run back and forth until 1860, when it was sold to the Pacific Crest Whaling Company. They took the Cumberland down around Cape Horn to her new home port of San Francisco. She would continue to carry passengers and goods from California to Alaska and ports in between. It was recorded in various captain logs and company journals that the Cumberland was never quite right for Pacific winter sailing. Her design made her difficult to maneuver in choppy waters. Her large bow made it hard for crews to see from the bridge in low visibility. She had an outdated hull compartmentalization system. The sound that waves would make crashing into the ship was said to be so loud it would interfere with crew communications. All of that would make it difficult to manage with an honest crew, but even that was too much to ask at times. In late 1864, the Cumberland's purser, the ship's cashier, basically, was arrested for overcharging passenger tickets and embezzling the profits. The ship was found at the time to be carrying more passengers than she was allowed, resulting in fines and promises to never do it again. Promises that, according to some, were never kept. By 1866, the Cumberland was a backup vessel. With an average speed of only 11 knots, her owners couldn't count on her to make good time on their hectic schedules. It was, by chance, that on November 27th, 1866, their vessel that normally made the run from San Francisco to Seattle, the SS Hendrix, was out of commission and needed a replacement. The Cumberland. Nine officers, 56 crew members, and at least 108 passengers boarded the ship bound for Seattle. Weather was calm the whole way up as the ship passed by Cape Mendocino, turned into the Strait of Juan de Fuca, entered Marrow Passage, and followed Puget Sound to Seattle. She arrived 12 hours later than normal, but there were no reported issues. The same nine officers and 56 crew members left Seattle with 99 passengers on the morning of November 29th and made the short trip to port possession, just at the edge of the Olympic Peninsula. The last stop before the Pacific Ocean. There, they docked for 2 hours, loading and unloading cargo and welcoming 17 new passengers to bring the grand total of souls aboard the ship to 181. They call them souls, the people that are aboard a ship. You may have already known that. I didn't. I like it. Anyway, All 181 of those souls left aboard the Cumberland at approximately 1:15 p.m. that day, taking Marrow Passage back into the Strait of Juan de Fuca and out, presumably, to the Pacific Ocean, where the ship would return to San Francisco and remained docked for the foreseeable future. The Hendrix was ready to return to duty by the time the next trip was planned. I say presumably because that was the last time anyone ever saw the SS Cumberland or any of its 181 souls. Actually, it's getting a little rowdy in here. I'm going to make my way outside. Looks like we're coming up on port possession anyway. That's better. Assuming this doesn't sound like shit with all the wind. Just gonna walk over here so I don't bother that lady over there. Okay, perfect. Where was I? Right. It's not too hard to figure out what probably happened to the Cumberland. That beautiful, clear sky that had welcomed them to Washington gave way to rolling fog and heavy rain as the ship began its trip home. As the sun set, it would have been impossible for the Cumberland to use celestial navigation to stay on course. Instead, they likely tried to figure out their position using dead reckoning, a way of calculating your location based on a previous one. As you might assume, it's a process prone to error. It also didn't help that the Cumberland was sailing directly into something called the Graveyard of the Pacific. You'd think they'd want to come up with something a little more cheery, a bit more positive, but there's a good reason they didn't. 2,000 reasons, actually. That's the number of vessels that are said to have been lost to this rocky and murky region that runs north from Vancouver Island down to Oregon's Tillamook Bay. You know, the cheese place. This block of water is littered with shipwrecks, and even now it's not uncommon to hear about at least a few deaths a year. Did the Cumberland strike one of the many reefs situated close to land? Did it suffer some kind of mechanical error? Was there foul play? We still don't know. The wreckage spot has never been identified, which is actually rather strange when you consider there's so many shipwrecks in that region that they make maps with tiny dots to signify where a ship now sits at the bottom of the ocean, especially a ship that size, with that kind of weight and bulk. Something like that doesn't just suddenly disappear, does it? Maybe that's why there's been so many ghost stories about the Cumberland. There have been many reports of ghostly ships off the coasts of Oregon and Washington in the years since. Some have claimed to have seen apparition crews rowing to safety from an unknown disaster. The Lady in Grey is a particular favourite of mine. Every so often, someone says that they see a woman in a grey dress standing at the very edge of Port Possession Spit, Cape de Brun, looking out on the strait. Usually people say she's there because of the Cumberland. Is she waiting for the ship's return? Was her lover on board? Was she on board? Before last week, as far as we knew, all 181 of those souls went down with the ship, or went wherever with the ship. Now we know that at least 4 of them got off alive, at least for a while. As for where they've been floating for the last 150 years, and I do mean exactly 150 years, is a complete mystery, at least as far as anyone's saying. Record keeping was good in those days, but it wasn't that good. So the chances of ever being able to say with any accuracy who these 4 people were is about as likely as me becoming a crabber. It's a mystery tucked inside a mystery, nestled inside a mystery. I suppose that's why I'm here. Before this week, I couldn't tell you where Port Possession was on a map. I'd never heard of the SS Cumberland or its tragedy. If you'd asked, I would have called it the Puget Sound. But I know a good mystery when I see one. I also know how the world works these days. A story like this, it grabs everyone's attention for just a little while. But once it becomes clear that the answers aren't easy and the truth may never be found, we give up. Move on to the next thing. But I don't work like that. I didn't end up a reporter by accident. A lifeboat from a ship that disappeared 150 years ago suddenly appears full of skeletons, and I'm locked in, obsessively locked in. That's not fading away in a few days. I'm here to find out everything I can, because why not? Given the speed of this story and the multitude of ways it could go, it didn't feel right waiting weeks for something to get written, edited, and posted. So, thankfully, the good people at BuzzRocks were kind enough to accept my offer of an ongoing podcast, the one you're listening to right now, to document what I find and where the story leads me. It's not something I've done before, but I feel like it's the perfect way for my reporting to be as real-time as possible. There's one thing that keeps nagging me, though. Why this one? I've come across plenty of juicy mysteries in my career. What is it about this one that made me get on a plane, fly across one ocean, arrive at another, and put my entire life on hold for the foreseeable future? Honestly, I can't quite put my finger on that yet. And maybe that's part of the reason I'm doing this podcast, not just to figure out why this boat is here, but also why I'm here.
We are now approaching port possession. Walk on passengers, please make your way to the front of the vessel. Drivers, please return to your vehicles. If you brought a bicycle on board, please remember to take it with you.
Does that actually happen? Do people bike onto the ferry and then walk off not remembering? That's ridiculous. Guess that's my signal to head inside. Like the man said, we'll be in port possession in 5 minutes, and from there I'm going to visit a few historical spots to get a better sense of the history here, which I guess is what you do at historical spots. From there, I'll follow the story wherever it goes, if it goes anywhere. What the fuck? What happened? Are you okay? Shit! What the hell? What's wrong?
You lied to me.
What?
You lied to me! I thought you were a good man!
Hello? Hello? She passed out. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Help! Help!